My friend Andrew has built a career upon generosity and positivity. He has spread good cheer through almost every kind of media we know. He's a TV host. He's a licensed podiatrist. He has 16 patents to his name and a new album called 55 Cadillac that's just him and a piano. My friend Andrew has gone through the major label system and come out with his pride and fan base. He personally knows every celebutant worth mentioning. Spends his free time teaching crafts classes at local universities, keeps a strict raw food diet, and his enthusiasm is only matched by his charm. My friend Andrew is a powerful motivational speaker, a winner, a role model, an entrepreneur, a club owner, a rocker, a balladeer, a master of ceremonies, a pianist, a life coach, an inspiration, a superhero, an artist, an icon, a guiding light, a beacon, a leader, and more than anything else, my friend Andrew knows how to party. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andrew W.K.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you very much for coming today, and thank you to CMJ for having me here. I'm pleased to be here. It was great getting here today. I took a taxi cab, and I found it interesting that when you got in the taxi, you pay $2.50 just for opening the door. Boy, New York City, it's great in fall because it's not that cold, but it's not that hot.
We love you, Andrew!
Thanks. I love you, Andrew.
So, really does mean a lot to me to have the opportunity to speak here today as the featured speaker. I'm not quite sure how I wound up in this situation or in this position, but I think that's been part of the story of my life. It doesn't make sense that I exist. It doesn't make sense that I get to do these things. And maybe that's why it's so entertaining. And for that, I am very, very grateful. So once again, to everybody who's come here today, for everybody who's worked to create this event, the CMJ Festival, or even maybe larger than that, the entertainment business, it's been a lot of fun for me to participate in, and I am sincerely grateful not only for the challenges that it's presented me with and the opportunities to push myself, to test myself, but most of all for the chance to meet people who get off on the same feeling that I get off on. It's a feeling that's a bit difficult to categorize or even describe, but if you've ever heard a song that you like, that's pretty much what I'm talking about. If you ever get a chill down your back when a certain experience comes to mind, whether it be a movie or a performance or a song or a concert experience, it's a particular life-affirming feeling. Maybe even just life-affirming in that it makes me glad I'm alive to feel that way. And the fact that I can't necessarily express it to you doesn't take away from its power. It almost adds to its power because it remains mysterious. And not so long ago, maybe about 10 years ago, I decided that I would focus all my efforts in life on getting to that feeling. Now, you could call that feeling joy. You could call it being entertained. You could call it being perplexed or confused. It's a feeling that is bigger than the way I normally felt day to day. Yet, it was familiar in a way that when I encountered that sensation, it seemed as though I had been born with that already pulsing through my veins, almost that I was returning to the most pure, primal place that it was to be a human being, not even just be me, Andrew, but to be a person at all. And I think that's at the heart of entertainment. I've been able to engage in it in a particular way, and again, I've been grateful for the opportunities that have come along the way. But it's been an awkward road at times that's taken me down different paths that I never would have been able to predict. But all along the way, I had friends and partners to support me and to show me, I guess, different viewpoints, different perspectives. And I'd like to do my best to share some of those perspectives with you today and really leave this open as much as possible to being a conversation and not so much just me talking to you. So at any time, if at any time you'd like to ask a question, there's a microphone right down here, and you can just make your way up to that or pass it around, and feel free to ask me whatever you'd like to ask. I'll do my best to answer. Before we go to that portion, I'd like to do this.
Thank you. So does anybody have any questions?
Why'd you do that?
Is that your question?
Yeah, why'd you do that?
Well, I didn't like that chair. But rather than ask for it to be removed from the stage, I figured I would alter it to make it more like a chair I would like. And there it is.
Thank you.
You can really see how the music industry has changed when you consider that CMJ has made this their featured talk today. Anyone else have any questions? Anything they'd like to talk about? Go up to the mic so we can all hear you, please.
I got two questions. One, will we ever see Gundam Rock in the United States?
Okay.
Two, now I like to party, and I have a friend named Marty. He comes to my parties. But really, I want to know how to party hardy.
Okay. Thank you. For the first part of your question, you asked about an album named Gundam Rock. This is an album I recorded recently, came out last month. In Japan only, and it's based on an animation series called Gundam. And Gundam has been around for about 30 years, and they're celebrating their anniversary this year, and asked me to record an album of rock songs dedicated to Gundam. I had never done anything like that before, and for good reason. And because of that, it really appealed to me to imagine going against that, doing something I had never done, and covering these songs, making my own versions of those recordings. It was worthwhile, and it was challenging. It will be coming out in the Americas, but only as an import, but it'll be cheaper than a normal import. It won't be $30. Second part of your question had to do with partying and party hardy. Just keep doing what you love to do and do it with as much intensity as you possibly can. Yeah, thank you for asking. Anyone else have anything they'd like to ask? Yes, yes. Would you mind coming up to the microphone, please? Step up. There you go. Well, I did not have to sacrifice everything. That's very fortunate. I had my body. I left that out of the deal so I could still maneuver throughout reality. It's very important. No, that's true. But there's that other part of yourself that isn't the physical version. That would be your soul or your spirit, the self. And as far as whether any of that was sacrificed, it's hard to say, because a long time ago, before I started working in this industry, I thought of myself as a person who was based on my beliefs, my integrity, my likes and dislikes, my tastes. I thought that that's what made me who I was, and thought my friends and everybody else were made up of their beliefs and their likes and dislikes. Everything from how they wanted to dress to what music they listened to, the things they loved, the things they hated. That's how I kind of identified with people, or didn't. And then I realized that that had nothing to do with who I really am. Those are just sort of surface variations on some kind of real, true inner self. So I felt okay about offering that surface self to the industry or to the world at large, and was willing to put that out there to be cut away at, for me to even cut away at, and try to get to the heart of the matter, which really has to do more with, I think, that sensation I was describing earlier. That feeling of joy, that intangible feeling of happiness, or just that things are okay, that the world is a good place. That's who I think I am at the core, and I think everybody here is.
And all those other layers that make us who we are just manifestations of that true self, but aren't the true self. So I felt okay about offering that version of myself to a major label, for example, or to a commercial, or to doing a project that maybe otherwise I wouldn't have considered. And for anybody who's been struggling out there, the struggle is really the whole key, to go through an ordeal and come out on the other side with, in fact, even more than you went in with. So if it's not feeling too easy, I think that's a good sign that you're onto something.
It's incredibly hard right now, and so I was wondering if you had any words of encouragement when you felt at very low points where you knew that you had to sacrifice everything to reach that inner self. However, there are days where you just feel kicked when down. I mean, at that moment, at those days, that seemed to last so long. What did you do to bring yourself out of it? How did you continue? How did you go on? What brought you over? What propelled you? Do you have any encouraging words for me?
The most important thing I would do is take responsibility for everything that happens to you and not think of anything as an outside force working against you, but think of it, I did all this. So something bad happened to me? No. I made this bad thing happen and then try to figure out the reason for it. I got very frustrated when I thought about the world as a bunch of out-of-control forces either helping me or hurting me. Things that would stand in my way, I figured they were put there by other people. And I realized, well, maybe I put them there, and maybe I did it to try to see what would happen if I encountered something like that. So taking responsibility for everything is a pretty intense vibe, because, for example, then you have to take responsibility for something like 9/11. But I think there's something more empowering, ultimately, about stating and realizing one's role in even the most dire circumstances than putting them off onto outside forces. So just think about why you made your life the way it is. Like, it's a movie. And why did you write the script the way you wrote it? And why did you choose to make their character the way it is? And if it's too painful to look at it that way, then you can certainly go on looking at it as being more of a victim. But it's not as fun. So I think it's a lot more fun to think of yourself as the star of this movie. And what movie is, you know, what movie doesn't have a twist and turn? What movie doesn't have a couple crazy characters? But thinking of them as manifestations of your own imagination is a lot more empowering than thinking of them as troublemakers. Thanks for asking about that. Yes, would anyone else like to ask a question? Oh, sure. Please go up to the mic there. I like your pants and shirt.
Thank you. I believe that you are a king among men. And I was wondering if you could give me a tattoo.
Well, I have never given anyone a tattoo professionally before. I have given myself a tattoo before, but I don't think that counts when it comes to someone else's skin. Do you have the implements here?
This is New York City.
Okay, well, in New York, you have to have a license to actually use a gun, but anybody can go get a needle and some ink from any kind of stationery store, I think, and that's what I used to do these tattoos here on my arm. But these ones were done professionally. As you can see, they're much superior. Just better line quality and better density with the ink. But I'd be willing to consider that offer.
So, like, you would maybe partner with me to the tattoo parlor and maybe sign your name on my arm and have the guy tattoo it?
I will consider it. It's a very intense question to ask at this moment in this setting. And I like being on the spot, but I'm going to sidestep that spot and just stand around it, kind of walk around the spot, just circle about, and then I'm going to circle back and talk to you about it
after I'm done being up here. But I appreciate you wanting to have my name on your body. That is a great honor. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
Thank you. That was good. There were times when people have wanted to have my name tattooed on them or my face, and I've seen it. I've seen it. The most recent time was a gentleman, and I think it was in Chicago, who, after a show I played recently, he came up and he pulled his pants down, which was an intensity of another sort. But he did that to reveal his thigh, which was a nice thigh. I mean, he was, well, anyway, so, and about this big here was a picture of me with this bloody nose, and it was intense. And my first instinct, and in the past when I've been in similar situations, was to say, why would you do that? And that picture of all pictures, I mean, this picture of someone with a very bloody nose, why? But then I realized that if someone's already gone through the trouble to get that tattoo, and it is going to be there, I mean, more or less permanently, it might not be the best idea for the person whose picture it is to say, why did you do that? So now I try to just encourage it and say thank you. Once it's already done, and say thank you very much for getting my face tattooed on you. That was a good choice. People have asked me about these tattoos that are just lines, and I always really wanted to get a tattoo. Many years went by of me dreaming what tattoo I would get. I was thinking a Tweety Bird or a Tasmanian Devil, a skull, obviously, some kind of skeleton. That was a kind of obvious one. Maybe Wile E. Coyote. There was a lot of sort of classic ones I was thinking about getting. Maybe even a whole big back piece of the main Warner Brothers cast. But it turned out that a lot of people already had that one, and I thought, well, if that's kind of been taken, I'd rather have something a little more original. So I wanted to have a tattoo that represented nothing. So I figured a line, it counted as a tattoo, but it really meant nothing at all. And I thought that would be pretty much the ideal. But then I realized that nothing is something, and it all kind of backfired, and then I had these lines, and that's it. So. Does anybody else have a question they'd like to ask? Yes, sir, please.
I don't really understand what's going on right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had the CMJ booklet, and everybody was talking about you. Do you think you could give a little bit of perspective? Because you seem like a really interesting guy, and I'm just, you know, I'm an artist showcasing here, and I'm just kind of curious... what you're all about.
Sure. Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for asking about that. The other day, I got to meet a hero of mine, a personal hero of mine, a visual artist by the name of Lucas Samaras, or Samaras. And I saw his work in a museum many, many years ago, and it was just completely mind-blowing. It just... I actually felt very much the way you just described feeling. I had no idea what was going on. I had no way to process the work I was seeing by him. The whole experience was a bit out of my familiar zone. But for some reason, I loved the way that felt. And I realized then, and many times since then, that this feeling of not knowing what's going on is a very close approximation of that feeling I was describing earlier, this feeling of joy. And somehow when you're able to get far enough away from familiarity or comfort or that safety of everyday life, there's a very good chance you're going to be taken to another place, maybe even a really great place, a place that will end up being part of you from there on out. A place where new ideas can be considered in a very pure way. A place where we don't have to question or doubt things so much, we can just process them and experience them. And I started to get into the idea that maybe understanding the
the world and understanding my experiences and understanding what was going on wasn't nearly as exciting as just experiencing things in general. And I thought, well, maybe I can have experiences and not understand them, but still go through them. And maybe that's really where I'll learn the most. Sometimes I think comprehension is overrated. So when I met this artist, it was pretty much the most excited I'd ever been to meet anybody. It just happened a few days ago. It happened on Friday. And I went up to his house with a representative from the gallery, this dealer who I had been speaking with and had been hoping he would help set up a meeting. And sure enough, we had this opportunity to meet. And he said he had looked at my work and stuff I had been doing, and he said, when are you going to settle on one thing, on just focusing in on what you do? And I said, I don't understand. What do you mean? And he said, well, you're doing these different things. You're doing TV. You're doing concerts. You're doing, you know, visual work. You're doing these videos. You're doing these lectures, whatever it is. When are you just going to pick one thing? I said, well, why do you have to pick one thing? He said, well, then if you pick one thing, it's like you focus all that energy or all that light or all that intensity onto one area. I said, well, what if the one area that I want to focus on is me, being me, doing what I want to do? That's the project. So that's what you're experiencing right now. And that's what I do. Thanks. I got to a place where I just wanted to exist, and I didn't want to have to pick what I was supposed to do. I wanted to just have it come naturally, and that might be a bit impossible. That might be a little unreasonable in a way. But having worked in the entertainment business for a while now, it became evident that you could just pick one area, like music, for example, and make a record and tour, make a record and tour, make a record and tour. And I have been working that way. But then that doesn't leave a lot of opportunity for other kinds of work. So I got really excited about the idea of, what if I could just be an entertainer and just work in all these fields, and that if someone was going to get into what I was doing, they would get into what I was doing versus the particular thing that I did that day or the one thing I was supposed to work on. So I liked the idea that I could do anything, and that was all part of the vibe. Okay. Is anybody else? Yes, sir. Back there, yes, exactly, you. And let's be thankful for the beautiful weather that allows this man to wear shorts on a day like this in the middle of October.
Sorry, I don't have any white pants.
Well, that's all right.
I was just wondering, you've been on tour quite a lot. What's like your favorite memory from tour? Are you okay?
No, I'm not, but...
Sorry.
No, no, it's fine. I'm just going to leave that.
Yeah, so what's your favorite memory from being on tour, I guess, is my question.
A long time ago, you can sit down because it might be awkward to stand there. I realize that now. That's a great question, and thank you for asking. Touring is fantastic. It was a life-changing experience getting to go out on a tour bus. I used to really dream about what it would be like to get on the tour bus for the first time and actually start to drive away from wherever we were. And that feeling of looking out the window and seeing the road pass, somehow seeing it out of the window of a tour bus, made whatever was out there so much cooler and so much more exciting to pass things by from a tour bus than from a car or a train or a Greyhound bus or something. And getting to actually see that come true was an incredible experience. And I've had enough dreams come true for me personally that I really believe, 100% without a doubt, that you can do whatever you think about enough. And almost that thinking about it is almost enough to make it happen. But there is some amount of action that is involved with actually manifesting. And when it comes to tour and favorites in general, I draw a blank because I can't pick one favorite. I've had a really hard time doing this, and you're not the first person to ask me what my favorite show was or where's my favorite venue or favorite city. What's your favorite album? What's your top five songs of all time? What's your favorite movie? Which is your favorite book? And I started to realize all of these things they're talking about are my favorites. And why do we have to settle on one thing or top five things or top 10 or top 100, any kind of ordering when it comes to entertainment? I want comfort and familiarity from my friends, from my family, from my home, my bedroom. That's where I go when I want to feel safe and secure and familiar with what's happening. When it comes to entertainment, I want to have my mind blown to pieces. I want to be shredded and chewed up and then spit back out. I don't want to have any idea what's going on. I don't want to be able to have any idea how to order that experience. And when you have so many fantastic movies, so many fantastic cities, so many fantastic songs, why do we have to pick one? Especially when picking that one all of a sudden makes all these other songs somehow less, somehow secondary, somehow inferior to that one. It's like when I used to have stuffed animals in bed. I'd have a very chubby teddy bear, had a very plush, rounded forehead. It was very appealing. Had two sort of semicircle ears, beady glass eyes. You've seen these types of dolls. But then I also had a really beautiful, plush, I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't a bear, it wasn't a dog. It was an animal. And it was equally appealing. But whichever one was closest to me, I felt like was getting the best treatment. When I would go to sleep, I'd put the one that I really liked right next to me. But then I would always feel like, what happens to that one that's on the outside? And towards the edge of the bed, and a little bit colder in the night, and maybe doesn't get that warmth from my body. And so I would rotate them and take turns so they would each have a chance to be close to me. And when it comes to those things in life, like entertainment, that we go to feel good, I don't think we need to just pick one. And I think that's, again, our mind grasping for that sense of understanding or that sense of order, that sense of comfort that I don't particularly, personally, want from entertainment. That's why we have, like, our bed, for example. It's like a very soft, comfortable place. I don't want that to be unpredictable. I don't want to climb into bed and have there be a spider in it or a bunch of needles or even a wet spot. I don't want anything like that. But when it comes to a song, please take me on a journey to a very uncomfortable, unfamiliar place. And I won't feel the need to order you. Thanks for asking about that. Anyone else? Hello, how are you?
I was wondering, do you have this whole theory of like the world being good through this feeling of entertainment, or the world actually is not as perfect as, you know, that feeling might be when you escape the feeling? Do you have any philanthropic initiatives for Angry WK's future, and can you like sort of like talk to us about the importance of, you know, maybe filtering that light through ourselves and
Yes, absolutely. And feel free to take a seat for your own comfort. First of all, personally, I don't believe that the world is, as you said, actually full of problems and isn't always that good. It's very important to me to maintain a belief that the world is good. And that's not a belief that is for certain situations or to present at certain times. That's something that must be, in my opinion, upheld all the time. And it's the letting go of that belief and saying, well, it's a nice way to think at times, or that's a great vibe to put out there in certain situations. But when we want to get back down to brass tacks, the world actually is all fucked up. That might as well have never said it was a nice place to begin with. So I think it's very important to realize that when we allow for that error or for the world to be a bad place, we're encouraging it in a way. That's just my point of view. It's also just felt a lot more fun to me to think, no, the world is perfect. And it might be perfect in a way that doesn't make sense, or a way where I could examine it and say, well, this doesn't seem perfect and this doesn't seem perfect, but I want to have this faith that in some higher way, even those imperfections are pointing towards some kind of ultimate good vibe. And I've realized at times that might be irresponsible or ignorant, and I've tried to grapple with that, I guess. And that's when it comes maybe to the other part of your question about philanthropy or charity or doing philanthropic deeds, where you're trying to, as you said, focus your energy on bringing about change or bringing about good vibes for other folks. And that's a real big, big, big question, because we all have a particular amount of energy and we all have our capacities. And then you have to really weigh how you want to use that energy that you have while you're out here. And I have been working with various charitable groups. Okay, that was actually that was a lie, and that's what that. I made an agreement earlier. I wasn't going to say anything about this. I made an agreement earlier with the lighting director that if I ever lied, they would just quickly dim the lights, not enough so that most people would notice, but so that I would realize I was saying something that wasn't entirely true and sort of come back to focus. And the fact is I've not felt personally compelled to be what is traditionally described as philanthropic. And I don't know exactly why that is. And it's something I've been wondering about, because a lot of the efforts out there by charities are trying to motivate other people to be charitable, not only to give money to their charity, but just to put their mindset in that direction in general. And there's something interesting about the fact that so many of us are not compelled naturally to give outwardly to other folks. And the only way I can rationalize that is because doing the best for oneself oftentimes by default can help others. And following one's own true will, doing what one is meant to do or what one is born to do, is ultimately the only way any of us can be successful anyway. For example, a lot of times when we see someone being charitable or working in philanthropy, it's someone that has had a lot of money or a lot of success throughout their lives. Not always. There's certainly people that have very little that still give whatever they have to others. But so often it comes from people that have already seemed to achieve their greatest moments in life and are now looking with how they can use that to empower the rest of the population. And I think that's a good illustration of how we all have our paths to take. And some people perhaps are born to be charitable. And I think some people are born to not be. And I think that's maybe the biggest key, is to remember, if you feel compelled to do something, then do it. And if someone else doesn't feel compelled, then allow them to not do it. And if part of what compels you is trying to compel others, then by all means do that. Any other questions? Yeah, way in the back, New York Yankees hat. Come on down. Watch your step. Okay.
So I've been slogging away at the music industry for about 12 years, and I always thought our band would be really perfectly suited to go out on tour with Andrew W.K.
Well, thank you for considering that.
My question is, would you take us on out on tour?
What is your band called?
I-45.
I-45?
Correct.
The letter I or E-Y-E?
No, I, as in just the letter I.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I have a couple of them. I got a Mighty Mouse. Oh,
you got a Mighty Mouse?
And I got a Calvin and Hobbes.
Okay. Right. Well, they're not Warner Brothers, but they're in the same family of...
I thought about the Warner Brothers on the back, but in a mosh pit.
Okay, well, that would have been cool, too.
This is my only question. We have a band, Anna Schreiner, and we'd be willing to play 365 shows a year.
That's the great thing about CMJ, is not only is it an opportunity to come and participate and learn and listen, it's also a place to come and present yourself. So thank you for presenting yourself to me and I-45, to all the folks here in this room, and I certainly will consider your offer. And we are actually looking at touring in the next coming months, so please get it. If you go to my website, my contact information is on there. Okay. Get in touch.
I have a free CD for everybody in the room.
You hear that, guys? Yeah, of course. That's a big part of what this is about. It's a big part about CMJ and about all music conferences, is you go there to get yourself out there. And that's actually an interesting topic unto itself, because I've met a lot of people who have asked me, how do you get out there? How do you make yourself known? How do you get attention? How do you make a mark? How do you get the ball rolling? And the question is a very good one. The only way I've been able to think about it is to make yourself stand out and to take risks, to try to expose yourself in a vulnerable way. And there's a lot of successful artists out there that I would say don't really expose themselves or don't necessarily put themselves in vulnerable positions and do quite well. So it doesn't necessarily take that. But anybody who's performing, anytime you go up on a stage, anytime you put yourself in front of other folks, you're taking a risk. And that's really the key. And even you coming up to ask that question, that's being vulnerable. Because you could have made a huge fool out of yourself. You could have come up here and asked a completely absurd question that had nothing to do with anything else we were talking about, that was only related to something based on the industry. You could have done that, and yet you didn't, and you put yourself in a vulnerable place. And you could have been humiliated even after the fact, where I could have gone on to almost sort of spin the question back in on itself and talk about the various aspects of CMJ, of asking questions, of being vulnerable, and yet that didn't happen either. And so the important thing to remember is to keep being vulnerable, to keep humiliating yourself, really, to keep chopping away at that ego. Because like we were talking about from the very get-go, with a lot of these topics, they come back to the idea of yourself and what do you want to do and what are you meant to do and what were you born to do. And sometimes carving away at the idea of ourself, the ego, the way we think we are, the way we think we should be, the way we imagine ourselves to be, slicing through that, completely crushing it in the most painful way, to me is really the best feeling in the world. And then building yourself back up and realizing that even the act of crushing your ego still involves the ego. So use the ego, humiliate it, and then sort of see what happens as a result of those two actions. And yeah, thanks again for asking to tour with me. Okay, yes sir, way in the back with a sports jacket, sport coat. It's a three button number. I can't hear you. It's a three button coat.
I don't have to wear it, by the way. I don't really feel terribly. I mean, I kind of like it. Do you not like it?
I like your jacket.
I mean, I don't really. I'm not really going to bug if you.
Are you drunk?
Like it. What? Do I look drunk?
No.
No. I was going to come up there and just give you stuff, swag.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
And tell you that it's a really cool, amazing thing to sit here. The name Every Boy, I came up with a mutual friend of ours, Melissa Cross.
Oh, yes.
Love her?
Yes. Melissa Cross is my vocal coach.
Yes, mine too.
Yes.
And she loves you.
She's amazing.
Is amazing, yeah. And she helped me come up with the name Every Boy.
Okay.
Every Boy is obviously a spin on every man. Everyboy.net, everyone comes here Saturday night, blah, blah, blah. The thing that you said that really kind of hit me is the idea of being true to oneself. Because the only thing I can guarantee to everyone is that I and can fully guarantee it, like may God strike me down right now with lightning, if it's not true. It's a sport jacket. It's, you know, he's got me, don't let me. He won't get you. Is that I can be the best me that ever existed in the whole universe. I am the only uniquest, rarest gem is this person.
Yes, thank goodness. There is only one of you, and that is true. There is only one of you, and that is a good thing. And that's a great thing for everybody. There is only one of each one of us.
Amazing. But let me just, the real reason I came up was I wanted to ask if you knew there's this guy behind you who keeps mimicking exactly what you do, and I think he's mocking you.
Okay, I appreciate that. That was actually something we had worked out ahead of the show, and we were hoping that you wouldn't notice it, or at least not bring it up. But the fact that you have just adds to it, and in the most awkward way, which I really appreciate. And thank you again for using the opportunity of CMJ to promote, because that is part of what this is about. And you did mention also your singing teacher, who was my singing teacher for many years, Melissa Cross. Excellent, excellent, excellent singing teacher. She also introduced me to my wife, so I'm even more grateful to her for that. And it's an amazing thing to be able to meet someone who's also benefited from her skills, so thank you very much. Now, as far as being true to oneself, yes, you can only be yourself, and whatever you do is what you do. I guess the idea is to think about what really feels the best and what motivates you the most. And I've thought about that a lot in terms of, well, let's say I have a day job, But really, I would rather be doing something else. Now, how do I tell when it's time to quit that day job? Or how do I tell when it's time to gamble everything on that dream? How do I respect that dream while also being responsible about my day-to-day obligations or responsibilities, whether it's paying rent or raising a family or all that? You can't. I just think it's as simple as that. You have to completely go whole hog, and you have to be completely irresponsible. Because the minute you hold on to some sense of responsibility in terms of not being crazy, not throwing away or committing career suicide, whether it's a day job or something else you're doing, I think that's, again, it holds you back from that full potential of going all out. So I would say not only to be true to yourself, but to be true to yourself by truly doing what you want to do. And I've, from my experience, when I felt like I was making a really bad decision, those were the ones that always pushed me the furthest ahead. Maybe because I was the most scared of what would happen if it went wrong, or maybe I was worried about the implications or the potential side effects or the worst case scenario. But I was so motivated to not have those worst case scenarios play out that I got it together enough to always see it through. So my only advice is to do the craziest things you can think of. Do the most risky things. Do the things that seem the least reasonable or safe. And I think that's the surefire way to get some kind of result. If it's not the result you're looking for, just please don't tell anybody I told you that advice. Also, I wanted to point out one thing you also said about being yourself and about, I guess, being the best version of yourself that you can be. I've had people ask me about how you be a successful musician. And I said, well, are you playing music? And they said, yes. And I said, well, are you enjoying it? They say, yes. And I said, well, do you feel like you're constantly improving at playing? And they said, yeah, the more I play and practice. I said, well, then you're a successful musician. And there's a big difference between being a successful musician and being successful in the music business. Just like there's a big difference between being someone who plays an instrument in the studio and someone who would, I guess, form a group or name their act after themselves or set out to stand out and be a singular person. But each path is valid. So it's about clarifying exactly, I guess, what you want to do within that. Just like there are people who are amazing musicians but not necessarily performers. So the more clear, I guess, we can be about exactly what realm we want to operate in, the more we can keep that vision in front of us, a vision that's so clear, a goal that is so focused that it almost feels like a memory. It doesn't feel like something that you want to do. It doesn't feel like I'm going to get my band on this label or I'm going to get my band playing before this size audience. It almost feels like you're remembering, wow, then it happened where we got signed to that label. Then it happened where we played before that number of people. I had a vision when I was about to release my first album about everything that was going to happen. And I had it by myself when I was in a gas station convenience store in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it was a very strange feeling because it wasn't this big epiphany, this huge awakening or sense of clarity about everything that was going to happen. It just felt like someone reading my biography to me. And it was a very strange phenomenon. I didn't take it too seriously at the time. It felt like I was remembering a strange dream that I'd had. But then over the next 10 years, really, as things unfolded, I realized that everything I had remembered actually happened. So I would encourage us to all look at our lives, again, kind of like that movie script, where you're the main character and you get to write this incredible story for yourself. And the more outlandish it feels to be doing that, I'm telling you, that's more encouragement that you're on the right path. Anyone else have any questions they would like to ask? Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Ray.
Ray?
Ray.
Oh, Ray, pardon me.
How's it going?
I'm well, how are you?
I have like a two-part question, if that's cool.
Yes, okay.
All right, the first one is like, I know you probably don't really believe that you've ever failed, per se, and that's in air quotes. But have you ever, like, entered a situation where, you know, you just feel like you didn't do as best you could? And how'd you deal with that? And also, you mentioned that you're going to have a riddle for Twitter, and I was wondering, when's that coming?
So, oh, well, that's very nice of you to ask. Actually, while we're on that subject, how much more time do I have right now?
As much as you want.
Woo!
appreciate that. We do have a riddle coming up, and I think I have at least another 5 more minutes before I do that riddle. But I appreciate you reminding me of that riddle, and it will be coming up. It's going to be a musical riddle. The thing about riddles these days, and I didn't realize this before I offered to do a riddle, all the answers for the riddles are on the computer. And as far as coming up with a fresh riddle, even variations, pretty much everything that's ever been done in terms of a question and an answer, the information's available. So I had to come up with a spin on the riddle, and I'm going to do it through music, and I actually really hope that you get it since you asked about it. And the great thing is, whoever gets the riddle will get this beautiful Roland V Studio 100. This is a portable recording studio done in partnership with Cakewalk. And actually, I recorded the majority of my first album on Cakewalk. And that is 100% true. I want to put that out there. I never would have been able to make I Get Wet without Cakewalk. It was the first time I ever recorded on a computer. So it actually is very meaningful to me and very significant to be here on behalf of Cakewalk. So at the very end, I'll do this riddle, and you will win this. And you will also win an autographed album of mine called 55 Cadillac and an autographed CD. Now, the first part of your question, refresh my memory. What did you say again?
Back up here. I was just wondering if you've ever
failed
in a situation where you feel like you failed or you could have done better.
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember this idea of always do your best, right? Yeah. Way back in school, the best teachers I had, my mom and dad, it was always this idea of, well, just do your best. And even these days, I've been talking to friends and family about this idea of doing your best. My brother's a professional golfer. And he is 4.5 years younger than me. He lives in Orlando. He's doing these pro amateur tournaments where the goal is to get on the PGA. If you do well enough in these tournaments, you eventually can earn a spot in the actual PGA and go for the big bucks. And sometimes we'd be talking and he would be telling me what he was working on and the next tournament that was coming up. And sometimes I would hear him sort of set his sights slightly lower or say, as long as I can just do my best, that's okay. There's a bit of a twist with that, though, because we don't ever actually know what our best is. So we're always sort of placing a bet or predicting what our best is, either based on what we've already done, based on the capacities we've shown ourselves in previous experiences. But I would like to think, don't even think about what we are capable of doing or what we've done before. We just think about what we want to do, and we hold that, not even as a goal or an end result we want to get to, but just as this thing we're going to do. It's not about trying anymore. I used to really be into this idea of trying, that no matter if you succeed or fail, at least you can try. But it shouldn't even be about trying. It should just be about doing. And the best advice I ever got from my dad was when I was first working on music and going, you know, all out, trying to really set my sights high. I said, well, I'm going to try to get signed by a major label. I'm going to try to get a record out, you know, by 2002, 2001. He said, Andrew, you shouldn't think about trying anymore. Just think about doing.
Trying is lying.
Okay, trying is lying. I like that too. Like lying down on a bed? Well, lying down on a bed. Now, when it comes to trying, in other words, I would like to just think of it more as doing, that it's just a series of steps to do it. To climb a mountain, you can think about getting to the top from the beginning, or you can just think about these steps that must be undertaken to get there. And it may actually require multiple attempts to get through some of those steps, especially the ones that we think of as harder, but ultimately you're just completing steps. They're just tasks. And it's all the emotions and all the questions of capability and how challenging it is that would make us sort of almost pull ourselves down before we even got the start. So my advice is don't even think about failing. Don't even think about those terms. Think of everything that happens as what's meant to happen. Everything that's already happened, just assume that it was always meant to be that way, because it takes all the pressure off. My whole mindset is to whatever feels the best is the way to think. And anyone who says it's irresponsible or ignorant, then they can think another way. I want a minimum of pain so I can focus all energy on what's coming up and assume that everything that's ever happened to me and anybody else was meant to happen to put us in the position we are in right now, from which we will go on and do the best of what we've ever done. We've all heard enough stories of people that have taken these crazy twists and turns and done this and that before whatever happened.
So I would always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, give everybody the benefit of the doubt that they're onto something, that they're in the zone, that they are a genius and they are doing their thing, and we're not here to question it or doubt it. We're just here to do our path and go to where we're supposed to go. Yes, Jolly. This is my friend Jolly. Jolly is an incredible videographer and archivist in New York City. Everybody say hello, Jolly! All right, that was pretty good.
On this last topic of failure, you recently had a piano battle with another gentleman.
Yes.
And he won.
Yes, he did.
Watching it, you know, subjectively, it seemed to me that there was some fix was in, but are you considering a rematch, and did you think that you actually did better than him?
Yes. Jolly, thank you for that question. You're speaking about a musician named Chili Gonzalez, who's an incredible performer, producer. Works with other artists making their albums, such as Feist, artist named Feist. But he's also a very accomplished pianist. He's a bit older than me, which means he's been playing longer than I have. And he invited me to participate in a piano duel, a contest where he would be on one piano and I would be on another, and we would go head-to-head. And this was something I had never done before and was actually quite scared to do because, one, again, I figured his technical ability was higher than mine, and he had been playing longer and had done more piano playing of this sort, and I felt very nervous. So of course I said, I gotta do this. This is the best. I could be terribly humiliated by this. I could be really embarrassed by the outcome, even if I won. And so that of course compelled me to want to move forward and do it. And we did talk about how the contest was going to go. More than that, I will not say. In terms of a predetermined outcome, you'll have to use your own judgment. But the fact that this guy, who was so accomplished, was willing to play with me was a great honor. And I didn't do my best. I just played. And I lost. Thanks for asking about that, Jolly. Yes, any more? We probably have time for one or two more. Okay, we'll do you, and then you, and then you, and that'll be the three.
Yeah, we met outside.
Yes, I remember that.
I kind of have two questions, but I'll shed the first question because I kind of have an idea of what your fear is, but not really.
No, that's good. Any questions you can answer in advance? That's fantastic.
Anyways, this is something I usually ask all artists that I've interviewed. What's the funniest joke you've ever heard?
You remember a few moments ago when I was talking about favorites and things like that?
No. It's not favorites. This is like downright funny. It's like out of the blue, you're walking down the street, you just think about it. You just start laughing to yourself.
I'm grateful that I have not been able to order my life in this way. And this is a great point. I'm glad you asked this. I have not been able to order my life in the way of best, of worst, of funniest,
really?
Of least funny. I have not. And I have made that a conscious effort, I will admit. I'm going to be awash in experience.
Try it on the subconscious level.
That's even more so. That's the subconscious just goes in complete turmoil. There's no rhyme or reason about anything. It's the conscious mind that is looking for that order.
So,
and I don't want to give it that satisfaction.
You're telling me that you've never, like, walked down the street and all of a sudden, like, you see a bird flying, then you just think of a funny joke.
Well, that I gotta admit, there was a time when I did see a bird flying and I thought of a really funny joke. But it wasn't the funniest joke. It was funny at the moment. It was funny. I mean, I don't know if you would think it was funny.
Try me.
Okay, what do you call two packets of Heinz ketchup?
What?
Two packs. Okay, well, hey. Okay, so you have my sense of humor. That's good. So a lot of people I told that to, they said that there's nothing funny about that, and that's not even funny in an unfunny way. But I thought there was something kind of subtle about it in the subconscious, funny kind of way it
See, that's my favorite humor right there. And I'll tell you, I've got one joke for you. Why did the little strawberry cry?
Why did the little strawberry cry?
Yeah.
How come?
He recently found out his parents were in a jam.
He recently found out his parents were in a jam. That's fantastic. Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I want to ask you about Santo's Party House.
Oh, sure.
So first of all, I want to say it's an incredible addition to the New York City scene, especially for musicians who are coming up. You know, to get to play a venue like that is just incredible. So I want to ask you how involved you were with the sound design, with the creation, and if there were any other venues that you drew inspiration from.
Thank you very much. Sandoz Party House is a venue that's recently opened about just over a year ago in downtown Manhattan on Lafayette Street, just below Canal Street. And I am one of the owners along with five other primary partners and then a whole slew of investors and then a whole slew of staff and crew, meaning to say that I'm only one person amongst a huge, huge group of people who've made an incredible effort and invested so much time, energy, and money and just belief that a new venue could be opened. When I say new, meaning no venue had ever occupied this space. Every other venue project that I've heard about or been involved in New York was always taking over another venue, taking over a bar, taking over a place that already had a liquor license. This was a place that we built brick by brick from the ground up. So it was a very large undertaking, and it remains absolutely the largest project I've ever been involved with in every way, financially, in terms of the actual workload, in terms of the number of steps. New York City has made many efforts to create as many obstacles to opening a place like this as you possibly could. And for good reason, because they really want to put you to the test. And if you can get through their ordeals, then actually just running the place seems like a breeze. And the fact that we've gotten to do this remains also one of my greatest joys and pleasures. We wanted to make a place that had a good vibe. That was the whole goal. That when you walked in, it just had this feeling of goodness, where you felt welcome. My personal aesthetic has been that there's more power which comes from inclusion than from exclusion. I think it's very easy to say you're not allowed and you're not allowed and they're not allowed and create sort of a simulated sense of value and meaning from that. When you leave people out, then yes, you develop some kind of power from what you don't include. But if you can actually include everybody and still have some sense of power, I think it's ultimately much better for the venue, for the place, for the business, and for everybody who had ever partaken in it. So the idea with this place is that everybody is okay and everybody's allowed. And not only that, everybody is perfect. That everybody could never do anything more or better to be able to participate in this. That just the way you are by default is phenomenal. And that's the way I want to feel. That's the way when I heard a band playing, I wanted them to want me to be their fan. I didn't like the idea that you had to be a certain kind of person or like a certain kind of thing to participate in something that felt so good. So we wanted to make a physical embodiment of that, I guess, that way of living. And that's what this place is. And to me, that's what New York City is, that everybody has a chance here. That everybody can come to this city and partake in it. And the more you give into it, the more you'll get back. And if that could also be said for the United States as a whole, I would be so pleased. I think that is the highest idea, that it's a clean slate. And I've been around the world enough now to understand there is something very special about this land. And it's very powerful and very overwhelming in the best ways. And it's just such an honor to live in New York City. It's such an honor to be able to spend any time here at all. There's so many people around the world that would give so much just to come here for a day, just to see it. To be able to live here and take part in this is just incredible. And to be able to make this venue that provides opportunities for young musicians, performers, music fans, audience members, that's just a great privilege. It's the first time I've had a chance to give back. And maybe in a philanthropic way, kind of a roundabout way, I think providing a stage is a real kind of charity in its own right. Thanks for asking about that. And yes, there was one last one. Yes, you. Oh, I like your shirt very much. I'm a big fan of Philadelphia. And she's got a Gino Steaks.
I got it here in New York.
Oh, no. All right, well, forget I said all that.
Earlier this year, I went to a taping of your show called How to Party with Andrew WK.
Yes.
It was supposed to be an Adult Swim, and I was wondering if that was ever going to actually come out on Adult Swim.
Well, thank you for asking about that. Thank you for attending that filming. That's fantastic. That was a pilot where we were going to see what it was like for me to host a show. And I've been on many shows on TV, all different sorts, but never had hosted a show. And we filmed this pilot at Sandoz Party House, actually. And it was a lot of fun. And from that, I got to do this show on Cartoon Network now, part of Adult Swim, same family, where I get to host and be the cheerleader and ringleader, sports commentator, coach, pep talker for two teams of teenagers blowing things up. And that's, again, that's just, it's just a dream. It really is like a fantasy. It really, I really do feel at many times in my life like I fell asleep at one point, maybe under the influence of some very intense chemicals, and never woke back up. And I've just been having this incredibly lucid dream where I get to do things like blow up stuff with 13-year-olds. And that's the TV show that I got out of that pilot that you participated in, Destroy, Build, Destroy. Thank you for asking. Okay, so I have just enough time now to do a riddle with you, and then maybe we'll sing one song. I'm going to move over to this piano real quick.
Thank you.
Okay, so first I'll do the riddle, okay? And the riddle is a musical riddle. I'm going to start on the key of G. Okay, that's important. So even if you don't play music, you should be able to get the answer to this riddle. It's a musical riddle. You win this Roland portable studio, as well as signed copies of some of my albums. Here is the riddle.
Blank.
Okay, well, don't just hold on to it. Hold on to it. You're going to submit your answers on the computer. You just go and research it. It's going to be done through Twitter, which is a social networking site that you'll figure out about. Now, you might not be able to see me. Maybe could you guys come over here and stand in as me, so that they can pretend that we're the same person and they can see you. So you'll help me sing, okay? So stand where they can still see you, right there. Yeah, that's good. And we'll sing this together, okay?
What are we singing?
I think you'll figure it out.
It's just the introduction. Party hard.
Thanks. Have fun at CMJ. Thank you, everybody. Have a great time at CMJ.
Hi, I'm a friend of Andrew's. Do you want to just tell me about the painting?
Oh, just going off the cuff, just like he was talking about. Started with a blank canvas, put myself out there. Had no idea what I was getting into. I actually thought there was going to be a panel. Not very familiar with Andrew, to be honest. I'm out of New Orleans, and I'm friends with the production guys here, and I was quite impressed. Well done.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay,
this is the production guys working the soundboard. Here's the crowd. Here's Andrew. Just pretty much laying down the set. Got some energy coming off of him.
It's very cool.
And, hopefully, I'll be back next year as the official artist for the CMJ, and I'm going to use different images like this throughout the programs and throughout
What's your name?
Frenchie.
Frenchie.
With
okay,
a Y.
Frenchie with a Y. Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, so Andrew didn't sign your arm then? What, he ran away?
I guess.
But it was cool to get up there with him, right?
Oh, yeah. It was the best time of my whole life. I can die tomorrow because now I'm happy.